Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. It has been a busy week in the world of football, and it's going to be a big weekend in the Premier League. Some big games to look forward to. Colin Buick from Off The Ball, he'll be in to look ahead to this weekend's fixtures. You got the Merseyside Derby, United, Chelsea, City, Arsenal. We'll have a look at all of those big games. Also, I'm going to be joined by Tony and Mick from the Irish Wolves. Wolves have had a bad start to this season. They're worse than over 170 years. So we'll chat to them about this season. This is The Kickoff. Let's get into it.
The Kickoff on Today FM.
You are very welcome along to another episode of The Kickoff. It's fair to say that we are well and truly up and running now. You can't move for the football between games on Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Thursdays. It's just, I don't know how anyone fits it all in. One man that does is Off The Ball's Colin Buick, and he's alongside me for another fantastic show. I know you're gonna bring it, Colin.
Yeah, you preempted the performance there, Col. Preempted it well.
Well, you were just stellar last week. Stellar. Before we get into the football, which I think this week we'll just crack straight into this weekend's games because there's a lot happening. I want to mention your hair. My God, you look fantastic.
Glowing, you know what? Thanks, mate. I appreciate that, first of all. Regardless of the sincerity levels, I'm going to take it. Right, I'll take that you said it genuinely. But you know what? Like, the hair, it's gone through extremes of both, you know. Once upon a time, Cathal, this was shoulder length during COVID. Do you know, I did 19 months without cutting the hair during COVID.
Yeah. My God, I need to see a
Before
photo of that.
Before we ever knew each other, I'd say. It's gone the opposite now. Every so often, I wouldn't say, not every once every other financial quarter, like, but I will do it every presidential US term. Every 4 years, I'll shave it. And we start again. We start again from scratch. So I'm the opposite to the boy that you recently interviewed on The Kickoff. That Manchester United supporter.
Yeah, Frank Islett from the United Strand.
So this guy, most people know of this guy by now. If they didn't hear you speaking with him, he's kind of everywhere. This is the guy who refuses to get a haircut until Manchester United win 5 games in a row. When's the last time United won 5 games in a row at all?
Yeah. But he actually said, though, that 7 or 8 teams did it last year and 5 of them did it twice. By the way, I know this is radio and podcast, but let's just explain that you've shaved off all your hair, lovely locks. Blade. You've shaved it. You remind me of Eric Cantona.
Thanks, boy. I appreciate
it. I hope that's a compliment to you.
Yeah, of course.
Because I mean it as a compliment.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
But yeah, he did say that it's happened a couple of times last season. he ain't getting a haircut this season, I can tell you.
He's going to die of too much hair.
Do you know where he lives? Spain.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Does he?
Spain.
He doesn't Spain. Oh, he must be melting. It might be a bit easier now going into autumn.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, though. I think he's after finishing up his job, and now he's full time with the hair and the TikTok and all. So, you know, I mean, I don't know how much he's complaining.
It's unfortunate for the boy, because a bit like this microphone in front of me, his hair kind of grows out and up rather than down and long.
Yeah.
Well, if it was down and long, there'd be no danger to him, but the guy could suffocate.
What's your Instagram if people want to have a look at your lovely
at Colin Buick? Is it on? I don't think it's on there.
Well, your Off The Ball videos go on to your Instagram.
Well, I suppose I suppose you're right there. I mean, you're as well off either following me or following Off The Ball. And you'll see it eventually, because I will be up there at some point.
The Merseyside Derby, half 12,
Saturday
in Anfield.
Yeah,
Saturday. It's on very early. Is that a fan thing?
Yeah, I think so. Now, it is known as the Friendly Derby, Liverpool Everton. A lot of families would support red and blue. I think there's a bit of tension on it, though. A few stats for you. Do you want them? Liverpool have beaten Everton the last 4 times at Anfield without Everton scoring a goal. That's how comfortable it's been for Liverpool. You have to go back to the 2020-21 season, when Everton went to Anfield and won 2-0. 2-0. Richarlison scored and Gylfie Sigurdsson scored. The last time, though, that Liverpool played Everton at Anfield was only in April last season. 1-0 to Liverpool, and the goal scorer, the winning goal, people already know it out there, I'd say, but to remind them, Diogo Jota. Did you believe?
Really?
Yeah, one of his last great acts for Liverpool was to score the winning goal. So here we are now, this weekend, Liverpool against Everton. And I guess, look, the theme of Liverpool's season so far, Cathal, has been that they have not been convincing in any of their games so far, but they've won them all, and they win them all at the death. So you're talking first day of the season, against Bournemouth, Friday night football. They won that eventually. It was 4-2, if memory serves. But they've had big games on paper. Like, so they're at home to Arsenal. You could argue Arsenal are going to be their biggest rivals all season. They won 1-0 with Dominic Szoboszlai. Free kick. They went to Newcastle and won very late on. Rio Ngoma, the young fella, got the winner there.
That's the game of the season so far, isn't it?
Brilliant match.
Yeah.
And then, I suppose, less impressively, they went to Turf Moor and they just about beat Burnley and now Atletico Madrid in the Champions League this past week against Diego Simeone's side. They were 2-0 up after just 6 minutes. Mo Salah hit the inside of the post in the second half. Alexander Isak finally made his debut for Liverpool, Cahill. Nearly set up two goals, nearly scored himself in the first set of shot in the edge of the box. But Atletico got it back to 2-2. Liverpool just didn't panic. Virgil van Dijk, the captain, fantastic himself in injury time, got the win for Liverpool over Atletico Madrid. Diego Simeone, the Atletico manager, was very perturbed by Liverpool supporters.
He lost his head.
Went mad, but it's unimagined if Diego Simeone doesn't go mental at some point. So Liverpool once again did it. And what will be really interesting now, Cal, is what type of a team plays against Everton, because they have so many options. They can do so many things, this Liverpool side, in terms of who plays where and who's left on the bench.
Does Isak start?
Oh yeah, I think Isak would be their starting centre-forward for the foreseeable, unless he doesn't score for a long time, goes out of form. I'd say what they'll do is, like Mo Salah will play when he's fit, I'd imagine, in the bigger games. So really, it's the left-hand side. Would it be Cody Gakpo or Hugo Ekitike? What are they going to do with Florian Wirtz? Will they shunt him out to the left in the bigger games? Possibly. Does this count as a bigger game? It's obviously a huge game. It's a derby, but Liverpool are, of course, a superior side to Everton. So can you play Florian Wirtz in his preferred position in the centre? But that means arguably dropping one from the three last season midfielders who won in the Premier League, of course, in Alexis McAllister, Dominic Szoboszlai and Ryan Gravenberch. And that probably means McAllister will be kept on the bench because Szoboszlai has been very good, albeit he's been out of position so far this season at right back. But now they're right back to the sign in the summer. Frimpong, he's back. So they've loads of options festooned with them. And as for Everton, they've been quite solid under David Moyes this season. I was worried about them towards the end of the transfer window in the summer. They didn't sign enough players. They got Jack Grealish nice and early, but they've since added to a Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, who used to play for Leicester, was signed by Chelsea. Didn't really work out for him there. He's had a decent start to his Everton career. And they signed young Tyler Dibling from Southampton, who was the young winger who played for the Saints last season in the Premier League. It was a disastrous campaign for Southampton last season. People remember that. They're one of the worst sides we've ever seen in the Premier League, Cahill. But one of their very few shining lights was this young fella Dibbling. So Everton have got him too. So they're tasty, tasty enough acquisitions in the summer. Brand new stadium, of course, but they have to go to the old stamping ground, Anfield, on this occasion. And as I say, you have to go back nearly 5 years since Everton even scored a goal at Anfield, let alone one.
But they've been brilliant when they play him in Goodison then, don't they?
Yeah.
They've had their moments.
They
brilliant
have, yeah, yeah. They beat them in Jurgen Klopp's last Merseyside derby at Goodison. Everton won 2-0. On the 24th of April, 2024. There you go.
There you go. And there was a 2-2 last year.
Yeah, at
Goodison,
yeah,
as well.
So they've had their fun at Goodison. What will happen to Hill Dickinson? We'll see that later on. This season. But as for this weekend, you're probably going to ask me for a prediction, so I'll get it out of the way and I'll say Liverpool 2-1.
You think so?
Yeah.
Will Isak score?
Yes. Why not?
Yeah. Go sure, why not? I did see during the week Arne Slot saying that he's surprised with Isak's fitness. He's fitter than he thought he would be.
Oh, I think it's an other way. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because he didn't play at all against Burnley last weekend after
when they were crying out for a goal.
Yeah, yeah, and it was like an injury time winning penalty from Mo Salah. But he wasn't in the squad at all. And I think for Sweden, sure, you reminded me yourself last week that he played for Sweden in the international, but he came on. But he didn't play the first game and he came on, so he didn't play that much. So I suppose they're easing him into it.
And an hour he played on Tuesday night. Or no, Wednesday night he played, wasn't it? I tell you what, right? Since starting this show,
right?
I mean, do you talk to your family at all? Because where do you get the time to watch everything? It is tough going. Now, look, I'm not complaining.
All right.
I'm not complaining, especially now when it's getting a bit darker in the nights, you know, with this Champions League on. But there's a lot of football to be watched. There's a lot to take in.
Well, like we've seen this week that the Champions League are spreading out across 3 days rather than the traditional two. That's only this week though, don't worry. Just a little promotion I do. Like
trying to balance the traitors as well in the middle of all of this.
Do you know when the shops give away free samples of sausages there? Do you know that?
I never go near them though.
Why?
I think it's...
Body's a temple.
What? No. I'm awkward with those kind of things.
What do you mean?
I don't like taking the samples.
Because you feel like you're robbing them.
I feel like then you're obliged to buy something, you know.
No.
What were you going anyway?
No. The people giving away the samples, they just want their desk literally cleared, not even metaphorically. They just want it cleared. They don't care if you buy it. You'll feel better about 15 seconds after doing it. The shame will, the Catholic guilt will be there at the time. But just walk by it.
It goes.
Leave it behind as you walk by. You gotta take the samples. What's our email address?
kickoff@todayfm.com.
Let us know. Pro or anti samples and chaps.
What was your analogy anyway?
Now, where did I go with that? What was that?
You were saying something about the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday Champions League.
Which is too much.
Yeah,
so they're, perfect analogy. They're giving away free samples, right? This week, they're promoting the return of the Champions League, but that's it now for this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We're not going to see that again. So every round of the Champions League after this would be back to the traditional Tuesday and Wednesday. So don't worry about that. So you're not going to be totally destroyed.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Traders is on Sunday, Monday and Tuesday, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't watch it, but I know people who do. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it's very busy this week. And then for sure, Friday night, you have League of Ireland.
Yeah.
And then the Premier League this weekend on paper. Like, we're only one third of the way through excellent fixtures.
Well, we better crack on with the other ones.
So you got, that's the lunchtime game, Liverpool-Everton. Whet's the appetite nicely. There's a few of your traditional 3 o'clock games on Saturday, but then we're going to fast forward to Saturday evening.
Yes.
5:30, Old Trafford, Manchester United against Chelsea.
Live on Sky Sports.
Do you know that United are unbeaten in their last 12 home games against Chelsea?
Speaking with a Chelsea fan last week, and he alluded to the fact that he doesn't really fancy it, never ever do well at Old Trafford. I didn't realise it was that.
Yeah, now United have drawn half of those games, roughly. I think it's 7-5 in favour of W for United. But you have to go all the way back to the very end of Alex Ferguson's tenure when Chelsea last beat Manchester United at Old Trafford, May 2013, which is the month that Ferguson retired. So look, there's been a lot of toxicity and just general negativity about Manchester United in the intervening 12 years. But the one thing that they can be rest assured of is they've had the better, or at least equal, of Chelsea in all that time at Old Trafford specifically. Very niche that for you there. So,
brilliant.
Chelsea are looking to get rid of that hoodoo. First time in 12 years, a new generation of players. They went to Bayern midweek in the first game of the Champions League for them. Lost 3-1. Thought they had got it back to 3-2. Disallowed goal by Cole Palmer after he had scored a lovely goal before that. But Vincent Kompany's Bayern got the better of them. Harry Kane scored twice in that game. Chelsea drew 2-2 with Keith Andrews at Brentford. That's our team, isn't it?
Brentford were brilliant.
Unbelievable.
How brilliant was Keith Andrews after the chat?
He talked so well, so eloquently.
So well. Talking about Jordan Henderson, I thought he spoke brilliantly, and about the long throws, and said that there was a bit of snobbery about the long throws.
I'm glad you brought up the long throws. They scored 7 since the start of the last season, Brentford. You know, a lot of the time, Roy Delap like memes and all that, you know. But sure, the Republic of Ireland were attempting long throws there in the last international break via Jake O'Brien. So was that Nathan Collins and Caoimhín Kelleher getting into the ear of Hamer Hargrimsson saying, gotta try these long throws, man. They're working out so, so well at Brentford.
They're doing well for us, yeah.
It's working for them anyway. But I was delighted for them. And obviously, look, we have a massive soft spot. The kickoff is unofficially, or officially, whatever way you want to see it, Brentford supporters this season. So a great point against Chelsea last week.
For all of us kickoff fans and Brentford fans, they play Fulham 8 p.m. and that's also live on Sky Sports.
Yeah, it's the second 8 p.m. on a Saturday game they've had in the Premier League.
I loved it last weekend.
Yeah, the Premier League are seeing them as box. Would you watch that game now, the 8 o'clock on a Saturday?
Oh, it was lovely. We had a hurling match on the Sunday morning, so I had to stay in.
You got to stay in.
Perfect. It was perfect.
Beautiful. Yeah, so great start for Keith Andrews, because it was tough in the first game against Nottingham Forest, but they've been really good since. And they won in the League Cup midweek. Carl, they beat Aston Villa on penalties. So it's going well there. As for Chelsea, look, I can't help shake the fact that Chelsea are really just a collection of signings, not really a team. I'm trying to name you the core of Chelsea, like what is their being. Back in the day, you'd have Petr Cech, John Terry, Ricardo Carvalho, Frank Lampard, Didier Drogba. I feel like their team now is Cole Palmer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though they have Moises Caicedo, who they signed for massive money from Brighton last year. They usurped Liverpool in getting that deal done. Caicedo scored a lovely goal against Brentford last Saturday. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful connection of the ball into the back of the net. I'm not doubting that Chelsea have loads of talent. They have loads of options. Like Jamie Gittins, for example, who they signed for Borussia Dortmund in the summer. He was on the bench against Bayern in Germany midweek in the Champions League. Like, they're festooned with options, particularly out wide. So I'm not saying they don't have talent, but doesn't really feel like they're a proper team yet. And I say that with full acknowledgement that they won the Club World Cup in the summer. I don't know if people feel the same out there, that with Chelsea, collection of individuals don't trust them as a team So if United were to win this weekend at Old Trafford against Chelsea, and not just because of the record in the last 12 years, I wouldn't be surprised, because I'm still not convinced of what version Chelsea are going to show up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear you.
But they absolutely have the talent to beat United at Old Trafford. 100% have the ability. And they have the ability throughout a variety of options that they have in the squad. They don't have a settled 11. They have about 15 or 16 players that can legitimately start games.
Yeah.
But it just feels to me that Reece James is huge for them, but he's rarely fit. Played in midfield against Bayern midweek. They spend so much money, don't have a clear option at the back. I don't really trust their defensive options. I just don't really overall trust them. Enzo Fernandez, World Cup winner, brilliant midfielder. Moises Caicedo is really not fulfilling his transfer fee, but playing like a guy who should believe he's worth that much money. And then they have the boy up front, Palmer. Just don't really believe him.
Okay. So now, so you're hardly leading towards a United victory here.
No. You don't trust United either.
I was thinking there as you were talking. But will Garnacho, will we see him? That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I would imagine so. He can play. Yeah.
I'd love to see what kind of...
That's a great example, actually, Garnacho, right? God, I forgot Garnacho even signed for Chelsea when he came on against Brentford. I was like, oh yeah, they got him as well.
Yeah, I know.
They have like every other winger in the league, basically.
That's crazy.
Is with Chelsea. I'll go one all.
One all. You think United are going to score?
Yeah, I do, yeah. In what way they'll score, I'll go a Bruno Fernandes penalty.
Okay,
Chelsea from open play. With a very specific prediction here.
I think United are going to get opened up again. They were just awful against City. 8 wins in 31 games for Amorim.
I think it's just below 26% is his win ratio since he took over just shy of a year ago.
It is absolute madness what is happening. And like... I'm sure there's coaches around the world are looking at that and learning a valuable lesson that it's absolute insanity to, even if you think you are right and this structure is right, it doesn't always work. You need the players and the system that he has is just... I wonder from up top in the board in Manchester United, are they eventually going to say to him, if you don't change this, you are gone? And he'll be like, maybe that's happened. And he says, fine, I'm not changing this, because now it's gone so far.
There's an element of me that believes that's what he wants to happen.
That's his...
He wants to get sacked.
Die on your sword kind of a thing.
Well, he has said repeatedly, this is the way I play. I'm not changing. The players are going to have to adapt. So, first of all, he's telling all the opposition what he's going to do exactly. They know what they're going to do. And more importantly, he's saying to the players, and there's a load of reports coming out during the week that at the start of the week was the players are uncomfortable with the setup. Midweek, it was that Amorim has 3 games to save his job because there's another international break coming up quite soon. So United have Chelsea this weekend, Brentford after that, and then Sunderland before the international break. The first game after the next international break, Liverpool away at Anfield. It's massive for them. I actually think at the moment, Cathal, that it's almost irrelevant who United play. So they could, you know, it's Sunderland at home and then it's Liverpool away. But sure, there's just as much jeopardy in both of those games because they're so unconvincing. Went on that diatribe about Chelsea there a few minutes ago. It's more pronounced for United, which is why they've fallen on a draw. Absolutely do not trust United. Whatever about Chelsea, at least Chelsea have the talent. United are shy in that department as well.
Yeah, they really are. They really are. It's grim. It's grim for United fans. Although Dave Moore is the most positive man you'll ever meet. He comes in here on a Monday morning wearing all his United gear. I actually wonder, is he
all right?
I don't think so. I think he's literally losing his mind.
Well, the mouth is smiling, but the eyes...
Something.
They're not present.
Is he just lying?
Well, Dave is a representation of Manchester United fans globally in that the hope is there, but the realism is setting in. It's difficult to reject it. But Amorim still cuts this strikingly proud figure. You know, he doesn't mind. Look, he's not going to change for anything. He was a young man in managerial terms. He's only 40.
This has aged him considerably.
Yeah, but he doesn't even get another job. And it won't really be held against him too much because he's one of many managers who have failed at United.
I hear
you.
One
of many.
But also the stubbornness to not change is... Well, I suppose, look, maybe you know what you're going to get with him now because he doesn't change. So maybe owners of other clubs would look at it.
Ego to take the job for Amorim. But it was... You were talking about the powers that be at United. It was madness for them to appoint him because they simply don't have the squad to fit into that system. I think they were hoping, like, they're going to get him mid-season, whatever about that the rest of the season. But it was such a disaster that he was under fierce pressure in the summer, particularly after losing to Tottenham in the Europa League final. So Spurs were even more of a basket case than United, and they lost to them. So then he was under real scrutiny. So there's additional pressure in the summer with his first proper pre-season, first pre-season with this side. And they started so poorly. It's their worst start to a season since 1992-93, which is the first Premier League campaign. That's how bad they've been. They're 4 points in four games. And they have a brand new front line. And the bizarre thing is, Brian Mbeumo, who they signed from Brentford, has been pretty decent. Matheus Cunha didn't play in the Manchester derby. He's been okay. And Benjamin Sesko had his first start for United, which was in the Manchester derby. Poor.
Yeah.
It's a mixture. Yeah. United, isn't it?
Mbeumo is definitely their shining light.
Yeah, he's been very good. Very good.
Well, look, okay, let's finish off with a very, very tasty one on Sunday.
Yeah.
4:30, Arsenal, City. The race for second place?
Interesting frame of that, yeah. Very interesting.
Early to be saying it, but sure.
No, but I think a lot of people go along with you there. Like, I still think, I've been actually asking off the ball all week, Cahill, who was the stronger squad, Liverpool or Arsenal? And I've heard strong arguments for both in terms of options. Like Arsenal's midfield is ridiculous. Declan Rice didn't play last weekend, for example, in the Premier League. They were fine. They beat Nottingham Forest 3-0. They can afford to do that now. Not so much that they could do that last season. Like, Bukayo Saka's injured at the moment. They're fine without him. Those previous seasons where that wasn't the case. So they've really added to it. As for Manchester City, they're an interesting case, I think, because they're nowhere near the City that was. You know, I was on about the Chelsea core back in the day. Like, long gone, obviously, or Kompany and Aguero. But now De Bruyne are gone too. He's gone to Napoli.
Mm.
They don't have necessarily that identity. They have a brand new goalkeeper to get rid of Ederson. But they definitely, a bit like Chelsea again, but more, much more together as a team under Pep Guardiola. They have a lot of talent. Loads of talent. They signed very well. Not just in the summer, but last January as well. So, with City, they're coming along nicely.
Yeah, they're not back though.
For the first time since Mikel Arteta took over, I think Arsenal are now better than City. They have a better squad.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it's the first time really that's happened.
And the talk, people kind of getting a bit excited about City after Sunday, that they're back. This is it now. Pep's mojo is back, but...
Be careful of that, though.
Yeah, it's not really the case, is it?
No, be careful of that, because first day of the season they went to Wolves and hockeyed them 4-0 at the Molineux. They lost the next two games then.
Yeah.
Brighton away and Spurs at home. Comfortably, it was actually the reverse. They lost at home to Spurs first, then Brentford away before the international break. But sure, like, loads of teams beat United.
Yeah, that's it. That's my point. Yeah,
loads of teams. Now, Haaland looks very good.
Yeah, I'm delighted, actually. He's my captain on fantasy.
Oh, is he?
Which you're not getting involved in. I don't see you in our league.
Last time I got involved in fantasy football, 2009, Gareth Barry. He killed it for me.
Okay. That sounds like there's a wound that I do not want to open there. Shout out, by the way, to Niall O'Sullivan, who was top of the kickoff fantasy league.
Good man, Niall.
290 points. Not Very Athlete is his name. I'm 172nd.
Out of
about 500 people, I think, or something.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. Yeah, 222 points. Had Haaland as my captain. Go on, give us a prediction for this one. So, Arsenal to win?
2-0.
Arsenal?
Yeah, 2-0 Arsenal, yeah.
Brilliant. 2-0 okay. Arsenal. So you're saying Liverpool 2-1.
Yeah.
United, Chelsea 1-1.
Yeah.
Arsenal City 2-0 to Arsenal.
2-0 to Arsenal. At this stage of the season, I trust Mikel Arteta and Arsenal. It's the other end of the season. He hasn't proven it yet. But they have everything going for them. Everything going for them.
Okay, it's exciting. There's lots of games happening. Lots of it live on Sky Sports. Colin Buick, you are a man that has shaved his head, but his knowledge is still there. Is that a phrase?
No, that was you're a man. It's like AI. Like ChatGPT to say that. You are a man who has shaved his head.
Shaved your knowledge.
Oh, that's good. Go on. You're a beautiful boy from Tipperary. Have a lovely weekend for yourself.
Brilliant. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the football. On the way, two very proud men. Their team has had the worst start to the league in 170-odd years. Two men from the Irish Wolves will be in for a chat. Tony Lawler and Mick McQuillan. You don't want to miss it.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky
now,
Sports.
This is very exciting because I have not one, but two Irish Wolves sitting in front of me. Tony Lawler and Mick McQuillan are from the Irish Wolves, the Irish supporters club for Wolves. And I'm impressed that you've come in, lads. I'm very grateful that you've come in because it has been a tough start to the season. So maybe is that why you came in together? Just kind of, is it emotional support?
Well, since how we go to most games together, we probably give ourselves enough. Probably too much emotional support at times, you know.
Yeah.
But, being a Wolves fan, you need it probably 24 hours a day anyway.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into the season, but let's talk a bit about the Irish Wolves, first of all. Mick, how long have you been supporting
Wolves? I'm supporting Wolves since 1968. For a lot of those years, you were coming over on your own, and the boats and all that, you know. But then we decided, a chap called Dave Rotwell stuck an ad in the Evening Herald and Authority to try and see if there enough Wolves supporters out there to form a supporters club. And we got a good response, and then we formed a committee that was in 95. And it started there, first of all, and then it was nothing then for about 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then another lad decided that we'll try and put it together again in 2011.
The present
one was set up, you know. So that's, and it's grown from strength to strength, you know.
Good days out, I'd say. He seemed like, the two of you seem like you're the best of boys. How long have you known each other?
We would have met in the airport back in 2006, 2007. Because I was involved in a lot of football coaching here, so I never wouldn't really get over to matches that often. And you can't get into the, you can't sit at the gate waiting for the plane without meeting this fella here, you know. So met Mick wearing the top and got chatting, and that's not nearly 20 years now.
That's how many games did you get over to in a year, Mick?
I get over there around 30 odd.
Would you?
Yeah.
Over and back?
Over and back. Oh, mostly over and back the same day. Thank God for Michael O'Reilly. He gets a lot of stick, but not in my mind.
Yeah, I think football fans like him, don't they?
Of course. Yes.
What do you do? Fly into Birmingham, is that it?
Fly into Birmingham, and lucky enough, there's only half an hour in the train to Wolverhampton. And when you get to Wolverhampton, it's probably the easiest ground to get to in the Premier League, because you get out of the railway station and it's only 10 minutes to the ground. And out back the same day, 40, 50 euros to return. You can't get better than that, you know.
Yeah, that's all right, isn't it? And do you go over to the away games as well then?
Yeah.
So have you been to any away games this season?
Yeah, well, it's just Newcastle there just Saturday.
What was it like going to St James's?
Oh, well, I've been a few times to St James's. What I like about St James's is that you can go into any pub and the fans are just football mad. Like, even after the game on Saturday, you know, sitting down having a point or two, having a discussion with ourselves, and if one or two...
Was a granddad and his kid came over
and sat down and talked about the game of football, and that's what they like. And I'll be honest with you, Carl, that's where you get all your information when you're talking to the away supporters, even on the planes and that. They know the ins and outs of what's going on.
Yeah,
you see these lads on television, their characters and all that, and they know everything about their own club, but they know littler.
Yeah.
Football. That's what I say. Like as Tony says, Saturday we had bumped into a few Coventry supporters. Now I know some of them for years going back, but there was a big amount of them on Saturday in the airport. And there was a good bit of crack, bit of laughter going, and a few Newcastle lads.
Yeah.
And that's what the day is not all about football.
It's all about
who you meet, and
it's connection as well, isn't it? And that's kind of what the supporters club are about. All for every club that has a supporters club, it's about meeting up with lads. Some of them it's like the first Tuesday of every month, and it's about
it's that
connection, isn't it? And the one thing that you all hold in common is your love for your football club.
We go around. We normally try 4 meetings a year. We have AGM in Dublin, and then we go around the provinces then for a meeting every couple of months. We normally pick the international break because there's no games, no league games on, so it's easier to get people together then because no one's travelling over. And we get a decent turnout at them, you know.
Yeah.
We go to Belfast now, and you normally get 20 or more.
You have the flag flying proudly behind you there here in the studio, the Irish Wolves flag, established in 2011. And the 4 provinces are on the flag, so that's important to you as well.
That was when we were setting out, that was the second time, as Mick said, in the early 90s, we had a club. I wasn't involved in that one myself now, but I suppose social media led to the rebirth of the club, because I set up a Facebook page in 2009, and another guy, Andy Taylor, he's from Wolverhampton, but he was in Mayo. He was working in Mayo as a teacher. And he set up a Facebook page as well. So one saw the other, and we got in touch, and we just said, and so we contacted. I knew Mick from meeting him in the airport going to games. And we just, from our first meeting in Nancy Hands,
yeah,
in down at Park 8 Street.
Yeah.
We started there. We probably had, again, we had about 15 or 20. All shapes and sizes and creeds came along that day. We advertised it and, it just took off from there.
You've been through some tough seasons. Back in 2013, you were in League One, which is as low as you'd ever been.
No, we were lower than that.
Well, that's
we were in the fourth division. We're one of the only clubs that's won every division.
Yes. Okay.
And we actually dropped down from we were in the fourth division down to the fourth. It's the only club actually that's gone from the fourth to the fourth in successive seasons.
And what year are you talking here? What kind of era? The 80s.
Mm.
You've seen some bad days and some very, very good days.
That's both ends of it. Yeah, but I listened to the supporters at the moment complaining. They went down, you know, and we had a playoff in the fourth division. We finished third, 17 points clear of the famous Aldershot, who finished in sixth. Yeah. And yet they knocked us out that was a sickener. And then Charlie losing 3-0 in the FA Cup.
Second replay, when it was a third game, yeah.
And sitting in the stand that day was our new signing, Steve Bull.
Wow.
And his attitude was, what have I just done?
why did I sign those papers?
And he signed from West Brom as well, who were the big rivals.
The big rivals, yeah.
But the Charlie game, people still use it now as a mark of, you know, a badge of honour for Wolves. That I was at Charlie, you know. The Wolves fans always say, there must have been about 50,000 in that game that day, you know. And it was probably about two. Yeah. That's class as the worst Wolves ever were.
Yeah, so that's what you can clarify. You're a true supporter if you were at that game, yeah. What's it like for having an Irish player on the team? Obviously, Matt Doherty is on it this year.
I'd go back to the Mick McCarthy era. We had Stephen Doyle, Stephen Ward. And Hunty, and I mean, it was a huge uptake on support for Wolves back then, with Mick McCarthy being the manager as well. We met an awful lot of people who started supporting Wolves around that time, particularly in the southeast, because of the connection with the players. Mm. And it was great for that. Matt Doherty is the only player we've had now in the last. He had a little bit of a vacation,
a little break away. And then he came back.
It's great. You feel like you have a connection with the club more than just, you know, a football club, that you have an Irish player there. It's great. Gives an extra boost to us, you know. So
Matt was a great signing for us. We got him for 50,000. I was at that match when we made Dave, that was involved with Wolves as well, was involved with Wolves, and he rang me in the Monday. He says, We're playing Bowers on the Saturday. He says, what did you think of our fullback? He was talking about Bowers. And I said, I didn't really know him, Dave. Why? He says, Mick McCarthy seemed to be very interested in him. He'll take him for 50 grand. And that was Matt Doherty. And that's how that happened. But we also had a famous one. And the youngest ever Wolves captain was a fella called Keith Andrews.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, he was the youngest ever Wolves captain.
Yeah.
And he was only 20, 21. And the Keith Andrews now is making his way with
Brentford.
Fair dues to him, but people wouldn't note that. And then the Wolves have a famous history because they're one of the founding members of the Football League. But not only that, they're the driving force behind the European Cup, because Wolves were, I think, one of the first biggest club in England to have
the floodlights.
Yeah. And in the 50s, Wolves were the big club in the 50s, not Man United, Wolves were. And they used to bring over the likes of Real Madrid.
Conved,
the whole lot. And there used to be 60,000 at Molyneux, what you call it, for those games.
For the floodlight
games.
And
that's how they played all these clubs. Then that's how it came around for the European Cup started.
Something tells me, Mick, you'd be a good man to sit on the plane with as you're heading over to a Wolves game. You'd have a story or two, I'd say, about your time. You've a great memory of the club and the history of the club. Why Wolves? Why did you support Wolves?
Well, that's a question many fans ask. And I tell you, my aunt in the 50s went over to Granant, and my brother went over in the 60s to do, and used to stay there. And I went over, I always remember the 24th of December, went over to see the brother, and we were over there for the Christmas. And he said, there's a game up with Molyneux. He says, Wolves are playing Sheffield Wednesday. Do you want to go? And I said, oh, yeah. And that was my first experience. And we got beaten 3-0, I should have known. That was my...
It set you up rightly though, didn't it? When did you start supporting him, Tony?
I started supporting Wolves in 71, and in the lead up to it, like 68, again, the connection with Mick, 68, my first game I went to, in, at that time as a kid, my brother was a Man City fan, my brother-in-law was a Man United fan, and he dragged me along to Lansdowne for, actually, it was I think it was United's first game after they won the European Cup in 68 to play at Waterford in Lansdowne. And I was only 8 years old at the time. I went along and I watched the game, Grant. He brought me to drag me to a Rovers game then a few months later. Now, didn't do anything for me. Great to be at the games, but didn't really do anything. So, next couple of years, when I buying, you know, the Shoot magazine and sticker albums and all this and watching Match of the Day and that, it's just kind of, Wolves was the team that stuck to me. Like Arsenal, Liverpool, Spurs even were, and United were the big teams around then. And like now, 80% of people in Dublin would have supported them, but no, they weren't my team, you know. So, but Wolves, saw Wolves, and I saw them playing a match of the day, and I said, yeah, that's my team, you know. And I was coming over to playing there about 2 or 3 years ago one morning, and I was chatting to a guy beside me, and it turned out after the half or 40-minute conversation on the plane, they actually played football together as kids. He was the goalkeeper. And he was actually going over. He was a Stoke City fan, you know. So maybe it's something to do with all the kids of that age group decided to rebel and they weren't going for the big clubs.
Yeah,
you know?
Against the United. So,
it's more than just a game on a Saturday. We were over that a couple of years ago outside the Leaping Wolf pub, which is right beside the ground, and we had the flag. So Fuse took a photograph and put it up on Facebook, and the lads, we were beaten that day, and one of the lads says, comments, oh, that must have been before the game, you know, we were all laughing and cheering, and we said, no, it was after the game, you know.
The result didn't matter.
The result didn't matter. It does. I mean, you know, it in does. The overall scheme of things, but like, the day out was the day out.
Yeah, know? Yeah, and it's all about the connection. It's a big release as well, isn't it? You know, those days out for all fans, heading over there, and that's your Saturday. Whatever's happened during the week, whatever, 3 o'clock on a Saturday or whatever time you're playing at, there's a release. You're all together and you're chanting. And do you get involved with the chants?
Oh yeah, you would. Yeah.
What's the most popular Wolves chant? Is there one?
The songs.
You wouldn't be able to repeat it.
Yeah.
Or is there a Wolves song? Is there?
I tell you, there was one of the funny ones. Very recently, we were in Girona for pre-season. We're playing Girona.
He went over.
We went over for the weekend,
Wow.
And, we were there. And
you really are dedicated.
You know, the songs, a lot of the songs that clubs and supporters sing are very repetitive. But you'd hear it every week at a game, you know, X, whatever it is a hole.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to go home. But the Wolves fans, we were there. It wasn't a great game. And this fellow starts to, he started singing, Wolverhampton is a hole. I want to stay here.
Clever.
Nobody else could see that, you know. Yeah. But like, it was good. I just thought it was funny.
Well, look, before we go, what's the hopes for this year? Obviously, look, it is the worst start Wolves have had in a campaign in 127 years. It's 4 from 4 in terms of losses. Just, is it survival again? Obviously, it's a bad start, but it's only 4 games in, you know what I mean? And you don't want to go changing managers too early. There's been 4 managers since Nuno Espirito Santo left in 2021. Yeah. You don't want another one. Obviously, now he's out of a job as well. Would you take him back?
I wouldn't take him back now. Yeah. I would if everything had fallen apart. But they say you should never go back. But Nuno was, to me, was a god.
Yeah, was he?
What he done it with. He should never have been let go at that stage. Yeah. They went to do things on the cheap. And we ended up in the mess that we ended up being. I think this lad will do a job. The problem is that most of our signings, we've had to let a lot of lads go off. And he's trying to put a team together. And my hope would be is that in the break just gone, we had 13 players away in international duty.
More than anybody
else in the Premier League. That would say to me that obviously we have quality. And it's maybe a matter of time of putting it together. But we do have a big issue. And it's coming in December. We've all the big hitters. And the African Nation Cup. Coming down, we have a good few of those players signed.
A lot of our big players will be gone to that,
and that's it might be my only worry, but I think the quality's there. Yeah.
And it's a bit, I think it's you just have to gel together, you know, that they are good players. I mean, players, even players that were outstanding for us in that we signed in January that played well for the remainder of last season, don't seem to have kind of hit the ground yet this season. And you'd be hoping that they do. Nothing major watching the games. Like, there's some kind of passes going astray that shouldn't go astray. A little bit of confidence maybe missing. Certainly when you see the training videos and all that, like, they look like a bunch of lads that are well gelled together and full of confidence, but it doesn't seem to have gone onto the pitch yet.
Yeah, but bar the Man City game, I mean, you've only lost the other three games by a goal, you know, and it's just trying to find goals, isn't that? That's the problem at the moment as well.
But I think from supporters, probably a bit frustrating because even those games we lost by a goal, at times we didn't look like we were going to be capable of scoring. Well, not the Everton one, we got 3-2, but we didn't look like we were going to score a goal, you know, even at Newcastle last week. Frustrating part, as we were there watching, we got a corner in the last minute, 1-0 down, and the corner it wasn't put into the box, which you'd hope it would be, and it went backwards and around, and the game was lost in a couple of minutes after that, you know. So it's just
small decisions.
Well, we should have been 2 or 3-0 up in the first
half. Early in the Newcastle game,
In the game. So look, I wouldn't be too worried at this stage. My big worry would be is the Belubas backing behind you, who roared the manager out every few minutes. You know.
So you're not shouting, get him out.
No, the man done worked miracles when he came in last year.
Yeah,
he was great last year, and I mean, unfortunately, I think the last three seasons, Once we've been safe, as everyone talks about in the Premier League, our form has just hit the floor, you know. And it's no matter the best manager in the world, I think the players seem to switch off. Once you've your 38, 40 points made, the last 3 years, and look at our results, we've gone on runs worse than any other team in the Premier League. So, and a couple of times it's led into the new season. And it's taken us a while. Last year, we'd 1 point after 8 games last year.
Whatever happens, I'd imagine that the two of you will be supporting Wolves to the day you die. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah. That'll be a fair guess, all right. Yeah. Maybe could even beyond that. I think that's what we're missing at the moment. There's a bit of help from the Wolves.
Yeah. You'll be looking over Molyneux in 100 years' time, hopefully watching them still in the Premier League.
As Mick McCarthy once said, my name is Mick McCarthy, or not Merlin the Magician.
Not Merlin the Magician. MM stands for Mick McCarthy, not Merlin the Magician, yeah. He did a good job, though, in fairness.
He did, yeah. Well, look, it's great chatting to you. You both are very passionate and very knowledgeable as well. Tony Lawler and Mick McQuillan from the Irish Wolves. If anyone wants to join, are you up for taking in more Wolves fans if they're looking?
Yeah, if anybody wants to join, you know, our website is irishwolves.org. We have Irish Wolves on Facebook and Twitter, or X, I should say.
I think, Mick, you should, for the Wolves, the younger Wolves fans, you should set up some sort of a study in a classroom, and you can just teach them the history of Wolves. I think you'd be absolutely
question and answer session.
Yeah, you'd be brilliant. Yeah, Mick and Tony, thanks a million. Really appreciate it. And best of luck for the season, all right?
Thanks, Cathal.
Cheers.
Thank you.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue.
Now, they are what you call proper fans. We were walking out of studio there, and Tony gifted me an Irish Wolves badge. So I'm an honorary member now of the Irish Wolves, I think. The two of them are heading over to the Leeds game this weekend. They are the definition of proper fans. If you're a fan and you'd be up for coming on the show, get in touch. kickoff@todayfm.com. I'm looking for a Bournemouth fan, by the way. A fantastic start to the season for Bournemouth, but I can't seem to find a fan in Ireland. I'm sure there's one. If you know of one, or maybe you are listening, are a Bournemouth fan, get in touch. kickoff@todayfm.com. Enjoy the games this weekend. I'll be back again next week to look back at what was hopefully a great weekend of football. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.